Hello and welcome to the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Eric Wetterling, also known as the Hedgeless Horseman. Runs thehedgelesshorseman.com, and we will put a link to that down below this interview so you can follow along with Eric's work. And Eric, we were having a spirited conversation offline just about the lay of the land in the junior resource sector, mostly looking at gold stocks. And what we were talking about was a lot of the best projects, when the cycle turns, get picked off right away by some of the majors. And we've already started seeing that happen. More recently was B2 Gold take over Sabina. We've seen some of the other smaller companies merging to become mergers of equals, like Corora merging with West Gold Resources, or we just saw Mako Mining take over Gold Source Mines. We just saw Calibre Mining take over Marathon Gold. You were mentioning, when we were talking about Gold Standard Ventures getting scooped up by Orla, that they also went after Contact Gold, and that's Pierre Lassonde behind that. So there's some other examples and some other recent examples, but the theme is that if you don't get positioned in some of these projects now that are the junior projects with ounces in the ground, the big boys are going to come in and scoop up the junior, and there's still money to be made by positioning now in companies that have been beat up. So why don't we pick up the conversation there with just how you're looking at positioning in companies that could be the next acquisition targets?
Yeah, I mean, we've heard all the billionaires pretty much say that this is the biggest dislocation they've ever seen, in especially in terms of gold versus gold equities. How do you take advantage of that? Because let's face it, I mean, an exploration project, I mean, let's say, or a pre-discovery store or whatever, they might find a deposit that might be in production in 20 years. How is that going to help you if the, let's say, opportunity is right now? Obviously, the ones that immediate opportunity are the producers that are producing right now gold at $2,400 and actually, you know, having some good cash flow, and they're trading cheaply. And that's why I think you see all the big boys. I mean, they're buying up the permitted mines where there's no obviously permitting risk, and you get the immediate benefits of buying them on the cheap because you get more cash flow. I mean, you buy more tangible value than the price you paid for them, or if it's a merger of equals, whatever, you get economies of scale, maybe some synergies, etc. Then it seems like, okay, what's been the kind of the main themes? Like you said as much, like Orla, and that's Pierre Lassonde, who's openly saying that, you know, he's pounding the table on juniors, and not only gold juniors, but like gold juniors especially. And he's the big man behind Orla Mining. And they bought Gold Standard Ventures in Nevada, a take under, if you will. But still, I don't remember the exact premium, but they paid a premium. And then they bought Contact Gold quite recently with, I think, 110% premium. And now, even more recently, Timberline Resources got acquired for 132% premium, like 2-3 days ago or something. So, I mean, to me, it looks like McEwen and Lassonde are saying publicly that they've never seen an environment like this. They're pounding the table. They are cheap. They love the sector. You see McEwen showing up in almost every Canadian exploration for Lode Gold, for example. I think he went into Emperor Metals more recently, and there's a bunch of other examples. But it's like they're saying something, and they're actually doing that. These are billionaires, and they're using their company's money to buy up all these ounces in the ground at multi-year lows. And obviously the funny thing is, like, okay, to get a sense of how cheap some of these juniors are, especially the ones with I would say a proven deposit, I mean, when they're paying up 130% premiums, they obviously don't think that they're paying fair price. They wouldn't buy them at those premiums if they thought that price meant no upside. So, I mean, how cheap do these guys really think some of these projects are? And I think that's a very, you know, comforting thing to see that, hey, I mean, if I'm out there saying that hey, some of these juniors are, you know, should be up 200%, I mean, I think these guys probably would agree in some cases. I mean, that's kind of what they're suggesting with how they're spending their money. And it's like the list of projects, I mean, it's getting shorter and shorter. And soon I would say it's like, what is the worst case scenario for some of, let's say, the better advanced exploration slash development place? I mean, the worst case scenario, I mean, theoretically anything could happen, but it's like almost a worst case scenario soon is like, yeah, you get a take under. You get a 50 to 100% premium and they're taking off the board. So you don't get the full revaluation through an entire cycle, meaning like, you know, 500% or something. But from these, well, from any level, I was going to say, a 50 to 100% premium is pretty good. But it's like, yeah, I mean, the space is shrinking.
Well, Eric, just thinking about that, there's a lot of investors listening to this that probably are in positions that are underwater 30%, 50%, 70% or more on some of these projects that have defined ounces in the ground. You're suggesting that actually now is the time to, what, either average down in some of those or for you to take new positions in companies that maybe you've been watching from the sidelines. You've seen their market cap shrink. You've seen the share price crater. And now you can be opportunistic and say, hey, this is still a good project and somebody's going to be interested in it. Is that how you're looking at it? Positioning in some of the companies that have been really beat up now, knowing that worst case scenario is the takeover premium, but the best case scenario is that they actually do run in this cycle.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, we talked about this before that, okay, for the last, I guess now, almost 4 years or something, which we, I mean, it's basically been almost 4 years that we've seen a bear market in the junior since the 2020 top. So it's like the only thing that really worked over the last 4 years has been alpha plays, meaning exploration risk. Typically, I mean, some other stuff has worked as well, but it's like it's mostly been exploration risk. So everybody that bought the highs in beta, they have seen their share price go down 80% or something, at least until the recent bottom. And they've looked at, you know, alpha plays, discoveries. That's the only place people have been making money. So I think, I mean, that's not going to change on a dime, I don't think, which leads to even more, I would say, relative undervaluation for the beta plays, because people leave the beta plays, the more they underperform, the cheaper they get, and go in, flock into the alpha plays, because that's the only place anybody's really been making money. So, I mean, there's intra-sector sentiment, and I think alpha has been the one, you know, the place where at times there's been really good sentiment. And I think it just have left the beta place even more in undervalue because the people that are already in, they get more and more tired of these beta plays and they see the occasional alpha play run. So they sell the beta. So, I mean, we can't go back in time. It's like even if beta is like the no-brainer bet right now, if you bought the last high and you're down 80%, I mean, it's hard to obviously go back, but I mean, you could still probably figure out like, okay, maybe I'm down 70% on this, but that other one is actually better and it's down 70% or 80%. I mean, then there's some value creation to be had from simple value shuffling. So there's always something to do intra-sector because there's no chance that every single junior is exactly the same opportunity. That just can't be true, especially given that any given junior can swing 10% each and every day. And who knows, maybe a 10% discount in a day, that's good for an additional 20-30% in the future. So it's like at these lows, I mean, the future expected returns just go absolutely exponential, even though it looks like, oh, who cares? Well, I'm down 80%, or this down is down 80%, and now it's down 82%. The only thing you're going to see is that it's down a lot. But that extra 2% can really add up in the long term.
Yeah, it can. And I think this is a time for people to do some of that value reshuffling like you talked about, and to look at where could the next acquisitions take place? Where has there been previous value built that's not being recognized? What has been beat up to death but is still a quality project and has a quality team? Let's maybe give people a couple of examples that are on your radar. One company we were talking about off mic that I know that you're interested in and you see being in this camp is First Nordic Metals. It's traded under the TSXV under the ticker FNM. And this is really the brainchild of Barsele and Goldline coming together into one larger company in Sweden, right in your backyard. Beside it being close to you proximity-wise, what has you interested in First Nordic Metals?
I simply think, I mean, it pretty much checks all the boxes I'm looking for right now. And what I think is interesting, like we saw in Montage Gold, I remember when they did their transaction with, I think it was Endeavor and maybe Barrick as well, when they kind of consolidated the land package around Kone, and the market didn't really care. And I wrote them up like, I think this is a transformational transaction, and the market didn't care at that point in time. Obviously, recently the Lundins cared, and all of a sudden the stock is up 100% or something. So, I mean, not much changed. I mean, did the market care about the merger for, between Goaline and Barcelona? It's like, yeah, maybe kind of. But it's like when I'm going back in time a bit, Goaline for a while alone, just based on their exploration potential in Sweden, had a market cap of 43 million. Barcelona at its peak back in 2017, I think. And obviously gold was a lot lower then. They had a market cap peak out at 178 million. So that's over like, you know, 220 million. If you combine the, at least the, not only recent, but like the peaks in those stories. Obviously, since their land packages are like, I mean, it's like you have Barcelona, the Barcelona deposit, which is the largest undeveloped gold deposit in Sweden in the center. Then you have gold lines ground to the north along strike along the gold line belt and to the south. I mean, are there synergies there? Obviously, I mean, they're kind of tied together. So now you have a company with the largest undeveloped gold resource in Sweden, which they currently has 45% interest in, and also one of the largest claim blocks or land packages in Sweden. They basically control the entire gold line district, and the combined market cap for those two entities is like 37 million CAD, I think. I mean, to me, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, the Barcelona deposit looks like that could be a really good mine. It's in a tier one jurisdiction. The infrastructure is extreme. Just, I mean, I posted some slides. I mean, there's a power line running over the project. There's a highway next to it. There's a railway next to it. There's a town not far from it. It's like 5-minute drive or something to the actual project. I mean, you cannot ask for a better infrastructure situation. And to have that in a tier one or, you know, first world jurisdiction, I think that's just great. So what I see in First Nordic is like, first of all, you have Tash Singh, who came on as the CEO of the merged entity. And like, I remember Discovery Metals, he took over a project for like 10, 20 million. He made Discovery reach a market cap of 750 million 2 years later or something like that. So it's like, do I think he has a sense of what is an unloved project that actually is really, really undervalued? Yeah, and he's shown that before. So to have him come on was like, I mean, that really got me interested when I saw him come on to Goldline. And then to be CEO of the merged entity, that's just even more interesting, I would say. And again, it's like tier one jurisdiction, multi-million ounce deposit, looks like a really solid deposit. And for people who probably don't know, Sweden has some of the lowest cost mines in the world. You can mine grades here and make money on it, which you would have no shot at making money on in most places of Canada. Infrastructure, basically as good as it gets. I've never seen a project with better infrastructure, at least. So yeah, it basically ticks all the boxes. And they have, you know, 100 kilometers of strike along the gold line belt. So if they find satellite deposit, whatever, that's just going to be free upside, basically. So this could be literally a mining camp, and you already have 45% of what is the largest undeveloped gold deposit in Sweden. So it's one of few, I think, that pretty much checks all boxes. And more importantly, because the most important thing is price, I think it's dirt cheap.
Okay, I appreciate you breaking down the value proposition for First Nordic Metals. It's a company that has our interest. We have talked to Barcelona in the past, and we have talked to Taj before in the past, so we'll try to get them on the show for people here to get an update from the company. Another company we were talking about in this bucket, and it kind of came from our walking around conferences and talking to companies, and you've also had discussions with the company, is another exploration company with ounces in the ground that are growing, and that's Red Pine Exploration. It's traded on the TSXV under the ticker RPX. And what has me interested is that their Wawa Gold Project is right on that same trend where Alamos Gold's Island Gold Mine is and where Magino was from Argonaut, where Alamos is picking up Argonaut in a merger right now. So speaking of another project getting scooped up. But Alamos also has a stake in Red Pine. And when you were talking with the company, as same with Corey and I, it sounds like they're getting ready to update things. They're going through a management team changeover right now, but it seems like they're getting ready to upgrade resources and maybe show the market that there's a lot more here than maybe investors have realized. What's your take on Red Pine?
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up well. And I remember Alamos also bought Manitou Gold. I think this may be a year or two ago. And that's basically a land play in the same region. And if I remember correctly, they bought it for $17 million or something. And they had no deposit. That's just for the land. So, I mean, Red Pine is aiming to have 1.5 to 3 million ounces. I mean, that's a wide span, but that's, you know, from the communication coming out from the company. I think they expect to have a new resource in second half of this year. So, I mean, that resource now sits at, I think, around 600,000 ounces. So, I mean, that's not been updated in ages. And they've done a lot of drilling, and drilling is cheap there. They're right next to the town of Wawa. I think they even have some, you know, legacy permits because it's kind of a brownfield site. So it's like from a regional perspective, they're smack in the middle of mining country, which you just outlined. Alamos, I think, owns 9.5% of the company already. So they've already kind of tipped their hat. Imagine again, like, okay, second half comes, they have 1.5 to 3 million ounces of gold in Canada at a brownfield site next to their largest shareholder, next to other miners, tier one jurisdiction, infrastructure pretty good for a Canadian junior and a Canadian project. And I think they have a market cap of 37 million CAD. I mean, that's ridiculous in my opinion. I saw gold juniors with a soil anomaly reach 37 million in 2016. So it's just... To me, it's just unreal what we're seeing out there. It's like, is that going to be acquired one day? Yeah, I think the odds are very, very high it's going to get acquired one day, because it seems like jurisdiction and like ease of permitting or permits overall seems to be like on the top two things on the priority list for many, or let's say, these billionaires and the mid-tiers, whatever. I mean, it's too small for a Barrick and Newmont, for example, but it's like, yeah, there are not too many assets that are in the positions of Red Pine and First Nordic. But there are more examples, of course. But it's like, to me, that they look like kind of no-brainer bets. And you can see, you know, the backers or the people involved. It's like, okay, if you think they have some idea what they're doing, I mean, you kind of can't go wrong. And if you can buy them near multi-year lows, I mean, yeah, I mean, again, there's nothing as guaranteed win, but it's like, hey, I mean, the odds are probably the best they've ever been, especially given where the gold price is.
Well, Eric, let's wrap it up there, because this is an interesting topic where some of these companies and deposits with ounces in the ground could very well be the very next acquisition targets for some of the mid-tiers, and they are getting the interest of strategic investors. It's amazing that we've seen a lot of these good projects already scooped up on the cheap in the down cycle in the precious metal sector, and it's limiting the amount of quality projects that are left for the mid-tiers to go after. As you say, a lot of these companies may be too small to garner the interest of a major like a Barrick or a Newmont, but those companies have their hands tied up anyways, and they're getting more copper-focused. It's really up to the mid-tiers to start acquiring some of these quality projects, or we may see mergers of equals to mass up into larger companies that get more investor interest. But an interesting topic. I appreciate you highlighting First Nordic Metals and Red Pine Exploration. We'll keep following up with both companies to get them on the show, and if people like getting Eric's thoughts, definitely click on the link below. It takes you over to thehedgelesshorseman.com. And Eric, as always, thanks for sharing your time with us here at the KE Report, and looking forward to our next conversation together.
Thank you, Shad. And consider me biased. I own quite a few shares of both of those companies, and maybe I talked about other companies I own shares of, and some might be banner sponsors, so consider me twice biased in that case.